Welcome to another episode of Culturally and Technically Legal with Josh Walls. Today we have a very, very, very exciting guest, the CEO of the Afro Future Festival that's held annually, Mr. Abdul Abdullah. Abdul, welcome to the show.
Appreciate you having me. Appreciate you having me. I'm happy to be here, Josh.
Man, super excited to have you, man. How are you doing? I see you've been doing a lot of traveling and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm in the thick of it. We're getting ready towards the end of the year. So as the days go by, it means it gets a little bit more stressful for me. But, you know, I'm excited. We're excited. We have pretty good headliners coming up. So I'm looking forward to the experience.
Right. That's definitely the place to be, man. I see celebrities posting about it every year. I'm like, I got to get over there this year. But before we jump into it, could you give us a little background about the Afro Future Festival, more so how it was started, how it came to be, your goals, your initial thoughts behind it? And originally, you know, we'll get into that later, it was called Afrochella, and now it's Afro Future Festival. But give us a little bit of background of, you know, how this was started and the importance of it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, this started in 2017 because we wanted to create a space where all the amazing people that came to Ghana, people have been coming to Ghana before they ever returned, mostly people who are from Ghana, and those who are in the know have come to Ghana, but, you know, and they've been always doing some amazing things around the world. And, you know, what we used to do is we used to party a lot, didn't have a lot of time for us to be able to connect. So we wanted to create a venue or a space that allowed for that type of conversation to happen, or a conversation around the experience in Ghana to happen. So we started to develop that. Also, we wanted to be able to figure out a way to get more people who are Black and from America to pull up to Ghana as well. You know, a lot of people from Europe had already been hip to the experiences in Africa and have been traveling there. But for a long time, there wasn't a lot of U.S. interest, at least from people in my community, about going there who weren't from there. So we wanted to change that.
Well, wow. Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I know since you've been throwing a concert, that's like that's on everybody's to-do list at the end of the year, right? You say, what you doing in December? You want to come here? You want to do that? I've already got my ticket booked going to Ghana. So I think that's extremely cool. I think a lot of people don't understand, you know, being a CEO, work extremely hard. There's so many ramifications in even just starting Afro Future Festival, right? And there's so much infrastructure that has to go behind it. And a lot of that stuff does lean itself to more legal ramifications, such as permits that are needed, zoning that's needed, certain things you have to do with the economy over there, immigration issues, vaccines, et cetera, venues, fire codes. Could you talk about that to a degree a little bit, about some of those things that had to be put in place from a legal standpoint, even if it's like age limits that you needed to do to ensure that something like this could come and be?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we first started, we didn't know all that we needed. I had some experience, you know, planning events, you know, started at Syracuse University, putting together budgets, understanding all the necessary things. Really, what I used to do is think back from of my experience as an attendee, you know, what are some things that I'll be looking for? And those things advised me to be able to kind of come up with it. But, you know, as we grew and our budgets grew, we have a production team who thinks about those kind of things. So they are responsible for, like, you know, making sure all of those things are checked off the box and ensure that they're there.
So what was your relationship like with the Ghana government? Obviously, you know, doing an event like to this magnitude, you're bringing a whole different economy to that particular area, you know, at least once a year when you are doing this event. So what was those relations like, and how did you go about being able to form those relations to have an event like this in Ghana?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have a relationship at all. We didn't have, the relationship was non-existent in the first year. The second year is where our event grew. We went from about 5,000 people to about 12,500 people in 1 year. So the government took notice, and the government took notice that most of these people were coming because they were coming to our event. And then some of the things that helped was a lot of people started calling the embassy, started calling to tell, you know, they're coming to Ghana with questions. And the reason why they were coming were because of the festival. So the government then reached out to us and said, you know, hey, how can we help? How can we help? You know, but, you know, Ghana's government is not used to investing financially. So we've never really gotten any money. But one of the things that they've been able to do really is help us, like, you know, maybe ease visa restrictions as far as maybe people can get visa on arrival, or people could, they were creating these blanket I guess approvals where people can fly into Ghana and then get a visa on arrival when they arrived into Ghana. Those are some things that was really, really cool and exciting that we were able to kind of do with the government, and now we're transitioning into e-visas. So as of right now, we don't have any official relationship with the Ghanaian government, but Ghana notes us as ambassadors to the country. Myself and my partners, through the work that we do by, obviously advocating for Ghana worldwide and inviting people annually to come into Ghana to experience tourism, to experience the culture, and experience Ghana.
Wow, that's really interesting. So one of the things that I took from what you said the government started taking notice, right? And they're not the only ones who took notice, right? Also, the owners of the parent company of Coachella started taking notice about you guys doing this event and using the last name Chella, because like I said before, it wasn't always Afrofuture. It started off as Afrochella, right? What was that process like, right? I've seen various, mediums, and they talk about copyright infringement lawsuits, et cetera, towards the Afrofuture now company. So what was, could you take us a little bit through that process and how that occurred and what happened?
Well, I can't talk too much about that process, but I'll say this. I feel like we were on firm legal standing as far as our usage of Afrochella at the time. You know what I mean? And due to court settlement, we decided to go in a different direction. But, we had the legal rights to use it for as long as we used it.
I thought that was interesting too when I saw that, because like I grew up personally listening to hip hop, right? And growing up, you heard Hov had his Jay Z had his company Rockefeller Records, right? You thought about John D. Rockefeller, right? Or you talk about Maybach Music Group with Rick Ross, and then you think about MMG, Mercedes-Benz car. So I didn't necessarily see it as a problem or any issues in that, right? However, what I do notice sometimes is when companies start to grow, that's when other larger companies start to see those things, or why didn't we have this idea first? And some of the readings, that's what some of the things, not necessarily pointed at, but you see this idea of you guys marketing in the United States and using a name and the confusion and stuff like that. And then we get into the idea of, copyright infringement law and what people think that to be. Has this idea of copyright infringement kind of lingered over you guys, and how do you think about it? That like moving forward with your business model and plan.
Well, I mean, we were pretty savvy as far as trying to trademark everything that we did, any event that we did, we went submitted for trademarks. We owned our domains. These are things that we were prepared for. We knew that it was possible. But obviously, it's a testament to our growth that we were getting all of these issues. It was negligible before because nobody cared about the type of cultures that we were highlighting. But when we came mainstream with our help, it became an issue. But I think that for the most part, we've learned a lot from that experience, and I'm hoping a lot of people have learned from us as well. And just to kind of be on top of your toes, I think that as for as bad as it could have been, we came out pretty unscathed as far as who we are as an entity. But I'm very happy that we were able to get to where we are. But yeah, people need to read up on those laws, and people need to be able to learn how to defend themselves and know when to pivot and things of that nature.
No, I definitely agree with that. So one of the things that we see more and more now in just any business that you have, there's some level of technology, whether you're using it for marketing from a social media standpoint, whether you're investing in learning more how generative AI can help your company become better or grow, or you're trying to learn about robotic process automation to help you scale back on what you're putting out, but scale more into, relationships with customers. How has technology affected the growth of Afrofuture, and what ways in which are you using it?
Well, I mean, yes, all of the ways that you mentioned, we're using it currently. Technology has been the one way we've been able to communicate through our teams. My team is, we all remote. Everyone is in all over the world. We have people in South Africa, London, LA, in Ghana, different time zones, but we've been able to work together effectively for the past couple of years, putting on this festival because Nigeria, even Canada at some point, because of technology, we've been able to work effectively. We use different apps, whether it's from Slack to WhatsApp to you know, to all of these apps to get these messages across to each other. And then obviously from a user standpoint, you know, being able to have access to our users directly through social media, whether it's Meta, whether it's IG, YouTube, LinkedIn, all of these apps have been very helpful in people being able to notice us and get to know us as well. This is how we've been able to kind of show people how we stand apart. You know, a lot of people have been trying to jack the sauce, you know, and really, you know, flip what we were doing. But, you know, originality and authenticity, it just kind of seeps through. And that's why we've been able to continue to be who we are in the space. You know, recently we just shot the festival in 3D for the first time
Wow.
on the continent with Meta. That was really exciting. We've done some AI projects with artworks in collaboration with artists on the field where people will be able to use their phones to see like avatars and engage with different art pieces on the grounds. We've done some of those things. You know, Africa really sits at the forefront of a lot of progressive technology because of the lack that exists around the continent. People have had to make do, and technology has been one area where we've been able to kind of excel, whether it's through mobile money, you know, right now we call it Cash App, Zelle, things of that nature. And on the continent, they've been using mobile money for years, right?
Yeah,
People
true.
are finding new effective ways to kind of to communicate and make better things. So the fintech companies, all of those things are very helpful. I've had to become a fintech guru. I've had to become a website builder. I've had to become all of these things and understand them in order for us to be effective in the work that we do.
Oh, that's interesting to hear. And just on a money topic for a while, right? You started this in 2017. We're now in 2023. Have you in the past or in the future try to incorporate cryptocurrency into either your buying processes while people are at the festival? And obviously, you know, with the whole FTX thing and scandal, people have kind of began to mistrust crypto since those moments. But what role does crypto play in your company, Afrofuture, now or in the future?
I
No
mean, in
pun
the future,
intended.
you definitely want to be able to take it. We know that it will just make it easier for payment processing. There's so many barriers to being able to move money. You know, like a lot of our money comes in from the US and from Europe, and moving money, paying people has been the most difficult thing ever. So we know that cryptocurrency can make that a lot easier because of like the, you know, no need for back borders and things of that nature, and being able to send money in minutes. I mean, as more people are able to receive it and cash it out to be able to use it in the ways that we currently use money, I think that it'll be more beneficial. Right now, majority of our customers are cash buyers, but we definitely are looking for more solutions to be able to kind of ensure finances are a bit easier for us to transfer and pay and make payments, things of that nature. Right now, it just hasn't been easy.
Right, no, and then the next piece, I know you mentioned you said you're doing some work with Meta, particularly with 3D. Meta has recently made the headlines regarding their new glasses, right? Do you see a space where this concert could become seen in virtual reality? So maybe I don't take the trip to Ghana this winter. I actually watch it from my home in Pennsylvania. Do you see that as a real possibility?
Is one of my goals. It's one of my goals. I mean, obviously we don't want it to be a deterrent. You know, there's no experience other than actually getting off that plane and that heat hitting you in the face
Oh,
and you
yeah.
start looking at the people and experiencing yourself in the people. But yeah, we definitely want to be able to extend our audience base by providing people with the opportunity to experience it through these 3D glasses. It's one of our goals.
And I'd like you to, you know, don't want to keep up too much, take up too much more of your time, but elaborate on the importance of going back to Ghana, right? We talk about 1619, for example, right? And you could obviously give more perspective into that. And what that return meant in 2019, you know, like you said, bringing people from all over the place who haven't been there for crying out loud, United States, Europe, and those places. But what did the whole 1619 thing mean for you in the return to Ghana?
Well, I mean, 1619 marks like, you know, the first voyage to from Jamestown to Jamestown, really. And it was an the first slave ships arrived in America from Ghana. And then, you know, in return in 2019, Ghana's government declared the year of return 400 years later for people to return to Ghana. When you visit Ghana at the different castles, there's these points of no return where essentially what it meant was this was the last time those enslaved people, not slaves, were able to see their country for the last time, right before they got on the ship. And what we did in 2019 was really just kind of encourage people to feel free and coming back home, and come through that door of no return as a door of return, and Ghana established itself as a space where people can always come and consider it home and find residency. You know, the year of return was in 2019. Right now, we're in the 10 years of beyond the return. And it's a welcome, it's a continuing to welcome. And, you know, the idea and the reason why we support it as a festival is that, you know, we're in a time where Africa, the whole world's eyes are on Africa. Either you're jamming to the music or you're eating the food, you're wearing the clothes and the fashion. Virgil Abloh was from Ghana, you know, very involved in Ghana. He was at the top of the fashion house of Louis Vuitton. You know, Edward Nwafu was at the top of the fashion house with British Vogue. You know, we've always been in culture, but we've never had our own space and our own entities. And right now, because of technology, people are able to see in real time what's happening on the continent. You know, and we feel it's an opportunity for Black people, at least the Black diaspora, to tap in, especially as all of these governments are trying to re institute their, you know, their influence in these regions, whether it's China, whether it's Russia, whether it's Americas. They're all running back because they see opportunity. Africa is the youngest continent. One of four people by 2050 will be African. That's how young the continent is. You know, we have a very deep population under 21. There's a high energy as far as the opportunity for a working class community. You know, we have a very young community. And then, you know, we have unicorns popping up on the continent. These are $1 billion in dollars evaluations growing on the continent. In technology, there's opportunity in agriculture, in art and fashion, in music. You know, you see all of these labels running to the continent to set up a space, and they're just extracting items outside of Africa, just like as always have been. What we're trying to do is put things back in. And that's why our festival is geared towards getting people to come back to the continent, for them to see for themselves, connect with the people, tap in with the people, build with the people, create experiences, create opportunities for each other. Let's build together and build the continent, build the space for the global Black diaspora that's befitting of us. Like, you know what I mean? I think, you know, for a long time, a lot of the story has been written for us. By other people who had conquered or who had power at the time. And we have a very unique opportunity with this rise of social media that allows one person to speak to thousands of people and their own following to create new stories that are true, that are direct, first person knowledge of you going back to the continent, experiencing it for yourself and sharing it with your following. We have an opportunity with platforms like yours and others to go back and tell stories that haven't been told in music and art and fashion and history and, you know, in beauty, you know, in all types of spaces that haven't been written anywhere for the continent. You know what I mean? I think those are the things that we're trying to promote as far as I'm concerned with the festival and the hope for the beyond the return, that people come back and invest that Black dollar, invest the diaspora in euro and Asian money, for, you know, whatever money you have or whatever money you make into these industries yourself. Benefit yourself, but also create opportunity for the people on the ground.
No, that was deep, man. You blessed us with a lot of good information, man. I feel like I was just in class with you, man. You gave us a lot of good information from business standpoint, international relations, law. So people wanted to find out more about Afrofuture. Where could they go?
They could go to Afrofuture.com. They could follow us on all of our social media platforms, TikTok, you know, Instagram, Twitter, Meta, X, LinkedIn, at Afrofuture. All of those details are there, and obviously they can sign up for the listserv and our WhatsApp channel. A lot of our information is there.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, guys, thank you for joining us today on Culturally and Technically Legal. We had a really great guest. Learned a lot. He dropped a lot of jewels, a lot of information on us. And please definitely go to his websites, to his social media. You'll be able to find that here, and just find out how to get involved. But thank you again so much for joining us, and wishing you the best, brother. Yeah.